Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2021. I'm now here with Martin Lichtmess, the famous Austrian writer und intellectual.
All right, famous.
Uberstern.
Okay, that's the word you invented. That's funny.
You thought I was going to say it this year, but there we go. So I should say, first of all, my internet connection is obviously quite crap tonight. I'm sorry about that. I'm looking into getting it upgraded, but that's going to be a few days. So I'm going to assume that it is going to cut out at least once during this stream. And if that happens, Lichtmess is going to just reply to comments in the live chat.
Unless my internet connection goes out as well, because I have troubles too. So we might both just blank out simultaneously. But then you people just be patient. In a few minutes, we are back and don't miss anything we say. Yeah. Every word from our lips will be like drops of wisdom for you.
Yeah, wisdom and wit.
Wisdom and wit.
So Lex, welcome back to Millennial. I think you've been on every year since, I think the first one was 2018.
No, it was 2017.
Okay, with
and ever since I have been
course,
on every
because,
year. With Caroline Sommerfeld.
Yeah, because you and I had just met a few months before that for the first time. So yeah, that would make sense. Mm. So you're one of the streams that I always look forward to the most. And
thanks.
Well, that's the truth. And you know, you and I speak quite a lot throughout the year, and this year, it's of course all been about COVID. And you have been you've written articles about it, written long essays about it. You've done a lot of research about it, and you have also experienced it in your own life in various ways. You live in Austria. And it has been, Austria has had its own quite a strict regime to deal with COVID. Do you want to just take it away? I mean, obviously we talked about it last year and you were, I remember you ranting about seeing a man wearing the mask in the middle of the night. He was on a deserted street. There was no one else there. And yet he was wearing the mask. That's my enduring memory from last year. But obviously this year things have got even more serious. So,
I mean, thanks for having started it, because inevitably we would get there. And I wonder if you're already tired of talking about it. I don't know in how many streams you have discussed it.
Everyone has their own perspective on it. And I think eventually I probably will get to the point where I'm hoping that the guest wants to talk about something else. But not with you, because I know that you do have a lot of things to say about COVID.
I'm also, as you mentioned, I'm sort of in the center of the storm now. I see that, the national reaction to this COVID thing is often quite different. If you remember, there was this novel and movie years ago called World War Z, and it was about a zombie epidemic outbreak, and the book was written from several perspectives, as if been assembled by a historian from each country in the world, and people had different, memories, and the countries would react differently to the zombie plague. And now we have the World War C. And this is also the reason why, I mean, we can go into that, and you went into that with Philosophica, that in nationalist circles there's also different measure to this, how important it actually is. I mean, for me, it's like if we would be now in the midst of World War II or World War I, it would just be nonsensical not to talk about it, because I think it's just at the moment, and for a long time to come, I'm afraid, the most important thing. And I just had a chat with a guy. He's a nationalist who lives in Sweden. And He would, you know, tell me his priorities are different. He worries about the usual right-wing things, and he says just COVID is just another asset and not even the most important one. And I would argue that if I would live in Sweden, probably that's the way I would feel as well, because Sweden has been, it had the best reaction for some reason to the pandemic, with a good outcome, which is also questioning all the other measures around the world, especially the lockdowns. Yet Sweden has also a rather high vaccination rate. This is where they are getting people moving. And I don't want to talk about Sweden, but I just want to say that right now here in Austria, I feel like the beast is looking me into the eye every day. I can smell its breath. I can feel it. And there's no other way I could set my priorities anyway different, because it's an immediate threat right now. Immediate threat by the the government has announced they want to introduce the vaccination mandates starting in February, and this would be the first Western European as a Western country to do this on a general level, right? And I was just kind of amazed and shocked why it would happen here. It can't happen here. The COVID restrictions were not particularly bad in Austria. You know, it was up and downs, you know, but it got more and more insane as autumn progressed. And, you know, we had the flu season coming up again. It was predictable that the papers would talk about how the numbers are rising and so. And we had also political troubles in Austria. We have now the third chancellor within a few months. So, you know, the famous Sebastian Kurz, he had to resign because there was a corruption affair within his party. It's too difficult to explain now, but there were investigations going on and there it was some dirt, and he had to resign. So he had a chancellor that was more or less his shadow. And then when Kurz also resigned from the being the head of his party, the shadow chancellor also resigned. And now we have a third chancellor within a few months. And this guy is the minister of the interior. And he's just a dumb, arrogant, hostile asshole. This is the worst thing I have seen in Austrian policies. When he was minister of the interior, he would be very hard on protesters against COVID measures. So, you know, he was heading the police and so, and they tried in January, they tried to ban protests on the ground of, you know, they harmed the rules. And it was just very preposterous. They just didn't want any protests to happen, you know. And I saw how the police would try to block the protests, but it didn't work because there were just too many people. So it was a huge humiliation for this guy. I won't mention his name. It's not worth it to be mentioned. And now this guy of all people is the chancellor of the state, the most unpopular chancellor I think we ever had. And you can see it in his face. He always looks like this. Look, so here. So,
that is so awful.
Yeah,
that's awful.
He's really an awful person. And the hostility, you know, the thing is that in the course of COVID, many states have become civil war parties. They were before. The tendency was there before, mind you. We will go into that maybe. But now it's very open. The state believes himself to be a civil war party. And anybody who is dissenting, who's not swallowing the propaganda or not taking the vaccines, which is a kind to, you believe the propaganda, you obey, you follow their orders, so to speak. You will be declared as a proto-terrorist or like an enemy of the state or so. So there's a very heated rhetoric in Austria towards the protests. There are huge protests, massive protests. I have never seen anything like it before. No? And I hated protests. I would never go there. I'm not a herd animal. But this time is very different. You know, I can tell you about the last one I saw, which was 2 weeks ago or so. And even though there was bad weather, the streets in Vienna, in the center of Vienna, they were filled with people, tens of thousands of people. Huh? Are you looking for something?
I am, actually. I've dropped something and I need to, but I am listening to what you're saying. Yeah, I'll find it and then don't worry. Just keep talking.
Oh, So there were tens of thousands of people in Vienna, more than you've disappeared. This is kind of funny.
Don't worry, I'm here.
What have you lost? Sorry.
It's part of my vape. It's a component. Don't worry, just keep talking. I'm listening.
No, I can't. I can't. You have to listen to me. I can't talk.
That's annoying. No,
this is your fault. You have to turn off the video so I can see that you are looking at your penis all the time. What are you doing?
No, I'm just not joking. Doing that. I'll turn it off. Here we go. You can keep talking, and I am listening.
All right. Okay, I keep. Okay. But this means I keep turning off too.
All right.
So what is this? No. All right, I'm here. Okay, I talked about the protests in Vienna. So I have never seen anything like it before. It was like tens of thousands on the streets. And I just can't do it. I need to see you now. And you have to listen.
Bloody hell, Blacksmith.
I'm sorry. This just annoys me. It throws me out of concentration, you know? I feel like I'm talking to myself. And then that's
no, you're not talking to silly. Yourself.
I feel awkward when I
do. I can't believe I've lost this thing. Anyway, All right. Okay, so we'll just continue.
But this is important for the stream to go on.
I know. Well,
do you need the thing? Is it essential?
I don't need it. I mean, I can survive. I can live. You said that you don't go to protests, but this one is something that has.
I used to hate protests, but for the first time in my life, it started in the beginning of this year. You know, I felt this time, this is the thing where it really, really matters, right? And I think it also is a just a perfect a moral cause, and I'm very moved by the people I see there, yeah? Because they are doing it in spite of a complete hostility by the media and by the state, by politicians. Yeah?
Is it the kinds of people who are usually on political protests? Because this is something I've heard about in Britain. It's ordinary people.
Yeah, yeah. This is the crucial thing. So I remember in the beginning, I was there right from the beginning, and you usually have certain, you know, eccentrics. They always appear on protests like this. There are certain groups, I mean, identitarians. They were there in the protests from the very beginning, so this was a reason for the media to label it as right wing. But in fact, the people who come there, they're from all kinds of political persuasions. Yeah, so you have, this is the fascinating thing I see. Huh? You have old young people, you have people from all social classes, you have right wing, left wing people, you have greenies, you have conservatives. I never seen anything like it, you know, but most of them are really normie people, you know. In the beginning, there were more of those eccentrics of the more, you know, more politically inclined ones. But the more the protests grew, I just don't see the eccentrics anymore. They just drown in that sea of normies. And many people come to Vienna from other parts of... Yeah,
that's interesting because you say the more it goes on, the more normies are involved. Yeah. You would think that the more it goes on, that the more the restrictions become tighter, the worse the atmosphere gets, the more the demonization increases. You'd think that that would scare off the normies. Like the normies would be thinking, oh, I can't be involved in that. But actually, it's the opposite.
It's completely the opposite. And the reason is I think the state has gone too far already by now, you know? I mean, people are seeing through it. Those people who do not want to get vaccinated, most of them cannot be reached anymore. The state is trying to put pressure on them, blackmailing them, frightening them, threatening them with losing their jobs. And now you have these vaccination mandates. The law is not even passed yet, certified. There's just a concept of it. And several parts of it were leaked to the press. So you have heavy fines to pay, or you can even go to prison if you cannot pay, you know? And
I heard something incredible. Yeah. I don't know if this is true, but originally it was some huge fine. I can't remember what it was. But then if you don't pay it, then they'll you'll go to prison.
Yeah, this was the first thing they said. There were several leaks, you know, and I think it was done on purpose to make people scared. To leave them in uncertainty, what's going to happen, right? And now we have this sort of Damocles on our heads. The great suspense in Austria is now, will this law be passed or not, right? And
can it be implemented? Well, let me tell you the extreme thing that I heard was that you can actually be fined multiple times in a single day for just being caught without being vaccinated. I mean, that seems incredible. Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that's fake news.
I have heard that one. They are spreading lots of rumors, but right now nothing is passed yet. No law is passed yet. It's just the rumors and just what they are announcing to do. And now many people believe, who are more optimistic, they say it's just a scare tactics by the government. They want to get their vaccination rate up and they want to get as many people as possible. But the weird thing is, if this law is function in February, then it would apply to not only those that are not vaccinated until then, but also to those who did not get their third shot or their booster shot. And this would be about 7 million people. It's insane. So this
is an interesting aspect of the whole thing, because, and I know I shouldn't perhaps interrupt you, but you are a very good speaker. But I keep thinking of things to ask you.
Sure.
An interesting aspect of all this that's emerged now, like recently, is it used to be that the conception was there are the unvaccinated who have received no doses, the half vaccinated who have received one dose, and the fully vaccinated who have received two doses, and that's it. But now you've got this idea that people, the vaccine only lasts for a certain length of time, and therefore people who are fully vaccinated can actually slip back into the unvaccinated category over time. So the vaccinated can actually become unvaccinated.
That's true.
Which is
That's
really
true.
Amazing.
That's true.
Yeah, I've never heard this about any other vaccine in my life.
No. And it's official now. The health minister, this is the guy who looks like Boris Karloff from Frankenstein's Monster. Look him up. It's Mückstein, his name. It's just a crazy sociopathic fucker, I'm sorry to say, but he's already talking about the fourth or the fifth booster shot, you know. All of a sudden it is announced, the vaccines, they just, you know, they lose their power after 4 months, 3 months, 2 months, you know, the timelines get narrower and narrower. And so even people who will not take their third shot, they will be mandated in February. And now this is a peculiar situation, because I don't know anybody, you know, except for a few old people in my family, who took the vaccine because they are scared of COVID. But all of them I know took it because they were forced, they got annoyed, they wanted to stop testing, they were threatened to lose their jobs. They felt like their life would be more comfortable. And so these were all the reasons. And almost all of them said to me, but I won't do it a third time. You know, it's enough now. Huh? And I know just one person who had a few side effects, which were not very grave, you know. But I won't get into the side effects now. But I want to say, what I want to say is this, that you will not only have those who are not vaccinated yet in February, but also those who say, fuck off, I'm not doing it again. And it will be, I said, a substantial part of it. And now here comes the hope in the whole story, because everybody's asking how they're going to do it. Because if you get the fine and then you can, what's the word? Protest, you know, you can write a legal objection, right? And if just several thousand people do it, several 10,000 people of 7 million, whoa, this is a hard work for the system, you know. It might lead to some bureaucratic collapse, you know? And this is what those that are more optimistic, they say, oh, come on, they just threatening, they just scaring people. they cannot do that. Also, they cannot do put that many people into jail or so. So they say it won't happen, you know?
So it's what they call in English a confidence trick. They're trying to trick you into believing that they are confident about this.
Yeah, yeah.
They know they can't do it, so they're hoping that you don't realize that they can't do it.
This is what we are hoping for. And now, why did they set the date in February? Now, this is pretty soon, but it's also the beginning of spring, the end of flu season. So 1 month later, in March, they can say, "Ah, look, it worked, you know, the numbers are going down." Yeah,
it's so transparent, and I've seen them do this with at other times when they'll start testing just at the start of flu season. So, oh my God, look at the cases! The cases are going up. They'll introduce a vaccine. I think they did it this year, just as the flu season is ending, so that of course the numbers go down. And then they can say it's because of the vaccine. I mean, it's pathetic. It's so transparent.
No, and this is a thing, another aspect here, which is so absolutely disgusting. We have a government of incompetent people who are both incompetent and lying and evil to a degree I could never imagine. It's crazy. No, absolutely crazy. And what's worse is the press, you know? I mean, I have to follow the press professionally. It makes me sick, you know. I have to do other things to wash, to shower myself clean from this, what I see, you know. But they have been, ever since they announced the vaccine mandate, there has been constant terrorizing in the press. You know, every day they announce some new shit, every day a new threat, every day a new bomb, you know. People are just being bombed with propaganda. And what is most frightening is they try to stir up aggressions within the vaccinated against the unvaccinated by blaming them for everything the government is doing. So it works like this. Government has put us now, I mean, I won't recall the whole story because it's getting very complicated, but government has invented a great new thing, which is called, we make a lockdown for the unvaccinated, which means a sort of segregation that if you are unvaccinated, you can't go into a shop or certain shops and buy things. You have to show your COVID pass. And you also are mandated to stay home, and you can only leave your home if you have good reasons. Now, this is a very broad term, right? And I haven't seen any policemen actually control people. Maybe they did it, you know, here and there to scare people. But it's obviously a scare tactics, you know. They just can't round up any random person on the street and say, "Why are you leaving your home?" I said, "Oh, I'm just going to the brothel to get the blowjob in an exchange for a vaccine."
Yeah,
which they did in Austria.
I can imagine
it's the police saying, "It's a true story. It's a true story. A brothel offered you blowjobs for free."
It was fucking grotesque. When I said, and half an hour with the lady of your choice. I mean, we used to moan about degeneracy and the decline of things. But here you've got the government approving of degeneracy in exchange for taking part in totalitarianism. That is just unbelievable.
It's on a certain level. It's fascinating to watch. I mean, it's clown world, but it's like Batman, Joker, clown world, dark. Also, you know, some parts are funny, some not so much, and
you couldn't make it up,
you know. And I see the thing is, I see it's working, you know. I see it's working. The day when end of November, I think 20th of November or 19th of November, and at the same day, the government announced the vaccine mandate is coming, and there will be a lockdown for everybody. You know, first they had only the lockdown for the unvaccinated. Now they said, now we need a full lockdown again, for the numbers are rising. So the vaccinated got pissed because they said, why do we have to have this again. We did everything they wanted from us. Why do we have to close our shops now again and stay home? And the government offered them a channel for their anger that, yeah, because of the fucking unvaccinated. They are to blame. It's a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Because of them, people are dying in ICUs or so. And they believed it. Many of them believed it. They swallowed it. On this day, I took some phone calls among friends and people I know, and everybody told me the same, that in the vaccinated bubble, they got apoplectic, you know. They just, wow. And they were so angry. And the other bubble, let's say the unvaccinated bubble, got angry because, oh, fuck, they are really doing the mandate now. So the overall impression was the state is trying to make both sides angry, you know.
Yeah. Biden, well, Cooper. Well, they don't. The state doesn't want the unvaccinated to be angry. It wants them to be demoralized and
demoralized, scared. But of course, you get angry. And but yeah. let me tell you this. And here we can close the circle to where we started. That this led not to the demoralization, but a huge mobilization of people, which is very encouraging. You know. So more people than ever, and probably more people than ever in the whole history of the Second Republic of Austria, went to the streets to protest this. I think this was amazing. So, and last time I went there, I could also see that the posters they made, some of them are very clever, very funny, very sarcastic, very on point, you know. And you see all these normies, and you see also when you are on the demonstrations, completely peaceful. Next day, the press tries to frame it. Oh, there were violent neo-Nazis in it, and Martin Sellner was seen, and some other guy, you know, the Lichtmess guy, he was throwing snowballs at reporters, violent, you know, terrorists.
Intellectual snowballs, of course.
Yeah, but I kid you not, this is the way the press reports about. The next day, they say, wow, there were Nazis amongst them, and they try to frame this as violent and as extremist, and the people are crazy, irrational, you know. And this is absolute weird gaslighting, because there's nothing irrational to refuse a vaccine on the basis of informed consent, not at all, you know. I mean, there are, of course, people there who are religious or have all kind of, you know, conspiracy theories, which I'm not hostile to, but the basis of the objection is completely rational. It's rather the other side, which is being irrational. The idea of universal mass vaccination to end the pandemic is completely irrational, you know, and on a face level, we can see it happening right now. This whole confusion about how many booster shots will you get, how long will it last, but they don't tell you when will we know that the pandemic is finished, when are the numbers low enough for us to tolerate it. They never tell this, you know, because obviously it seems like they want to have this go on forever. And probably, I mean, I don't want to go into this too much, but probably the trap that is going to, you know, go down is the vaccine passports, COVID passports, which can be extended into all kind of other matters. Maybe you get a climate pass extension at one day, like you have on your pass how many CO2 points have you already used up this week, you know. Or maybe next time you said something naughty on Facebook, or you read the wrong paper or whatever, right? So this is, of course, certainly, I mean, many others have commented on it, and it's absolutely clear that this is the way. There's going to be a sort of social credit system.
Let's leave that for later.
Let's leave that for later. But just to give you a picture of what's happening in Austria. And you know, I also can tell you why this is important for right wingers or for nationalists, and because this is a question many seem to have, or many don't seem to understand. You know, now here's the thing about the protests in Austria. I mean, one thing I found incredibly touching, that they chose as a symbol of unity the Austrian flag, you know, the red, white, red flag. Right. So you go to the protest and you see a sea of our national flag, right? And the message is to say, actually we are the people, you know, just like in Germany 1989 when the GDR came down, they said, wir sind das Volk, we are the people. And this is a strong opposition against the government and the press. So the people are using a classically democratic or populist means to defend themselves. And it's the only means they have left because they don't have any political representation now, except for some guys in the Freedom Party who are fighting bravely, I must say. Respect, great, great guys there. They are redeemed from any stupid things they have done in the past. And they don't have almost no media representation because the media is almost unified against the vaccine. Those who don't want to take it, you know, the critics. Yeah? And so this is an interesting phenomenon, you know. And when you look at the people, it's almost exclusively ethnic Austrians, right? Many from the countryside, not from the big city. But there are also migrants in it. And in fact, the migrant population is a huge problem for the vaccinators.
Yeah. And so I was just going to say, we know, and it's the same in Britain, it's the same in the Netherlands, I'm sure it's the same in Germany, France, that the immigrants, refugees and whatever, they're not taking the vaccine. So it's interesting that they're not showing up at the protests. But I guess that's because they don't feel engaged with the political culture of their adopted country, whereas ethnic Austrians do.
Mm. There are some of them, but they more withdraw within their own communities and parallel societies. You know, and
well, it's multiculturalism, right?
Yeah. But you know, this is the bright side of multiculturalism here. I support it. I see a bright side now to this. You know, I mean, there are all these, you know, Serbian people. Or these Arab people, it will be fun to see the vaccination squads, you know, get into their quarters and try to force vaccinate them. You know, I'm enjoying the show with popcorn. So this multiculturalism, ironically, you know, has proved to be a sort of a block, you know. And here this is for me an absolutely fascinating thing that we now have a reshuffling of the cards, a reshuffling of the front in a strange way. Let me explain this a bit more. You know, some years ago, in 2017, when we had our first Millennium, I was with my friend Caroline Sommerfeld, co-writer of a book which was a quite best-selling book in our, you know, small terms, and was called Living with Leftists. And it was sort of a humorous survival guide, you know, how to deal with leftists, how to counter their arguments and so. And back then it was the peak of the so-called populist wave. You know, it was the first year of Trump. Everybody was becoming sort of right wing. It was the effect of the refugee crisis.
It was also the best year for my channel in terms of numbers and success. Mm. I had a tremendous 2017. But yeah, go on.
Me too. I mean, I sold so many books, and me and my publishing house, we had a huge fun scandal at the Frankfurt Book Fair. You know, the press was all over us, and we even got some favorable reviews of our book in mainstream papers. This was amazing. It was amazing. And everybody was talking about back then how the country is being polarized, you know, and how a split in two. And it was divided because of the refugee crisis. And we had a similar rhetoric as now. We had the evil guys were not the unvaccinated, but it was the populists, the right-wingers, AfD, and so, Pegida in Dresden, you know. These were the great unwashed evil people who did not belong to polite society and who were sort of outgrouped, you know. So it was a very similar pattern, you know. The rhetorics were very similar. And so, and funny thing is also you were treating right-wingers as a sort of virus. You cannot get close to them. You would be infected. The books are infectious. You know, don't touch it. You can't breathe the same air in the same room with them. They have to be canceled. You can't have discussions with them because they might infect you with their evil virus and so. So I see different interesting.
And there's areas. No vaccine.
Yeah, they try to find vaccines by also pumping money into all sorts of educational programs by the government. You know, in Germany it was called the fight against the right. You know, the Kampf gegen rechts, and it's a huge industry, and they pay I don't know, hundreds of thousands of idiots. You know, who write articles about how Lichtness is evil and all that. So this was the time in 2017. And me and Caroline, we tried to analyze this split in the nation, but we were not satisfied by just settling for a classical left-right divide. Like you would say, the left is more for equality, the right is more for, you know, inequality or hierarchy or difference, or how you may call it, or the right would be more for the idea that institutions are important to shape the individual, and the left wingers would be more like, ooh, everybody has to be freed and liberated and emancipated. So this would be classical historical divides, right? Or but this did not satisfy us because it was not true to what we saw. And so we had 3 points to say where we can see who falls on which side, you know, who is being called a populist or a right winger, because many people would be called populists or right wingers who were not at all, but they were critical about immigration things, they were critical about political correctness, they were critical about the narrowing of Overton windows, and immediately they would be put into the right wing corner. So we asked, what does get you put into the right wing corner? And we found that the core of the polarization was distrust. And distrust in the media and distrust in politicians. If somebody would distrust the media politicians, he would be more likely be in the right-wing camp, or that camp that would be called right-wing, right? And this is something that goes way back for my generation, for example. I think the great divide was 9/11. They were the ones who followed the mainstream story, and they were the ones who, you know, got into the jungle of the internet and would find out maybe the official story is different, maybe media can manipulate in a way that was not before. So there was a sort of split years ago before that. So this was distrust in media and politicians was the first line. The second line we would call utopianism against realism. Right? This is more broad than, I mean, in history, the left wingers would be on the side of utopians. You know, they want to create societies which are equal and which are, you know, collectivist, which where all the evil, you know, exploitation disappears, like in communism and so. And right wingers would be in history, or ever since they started to be consciously right wingers after the French Revolution, they would be more like arguing man is an animal that is, you know, it cannot fallen. Be made equal. Yeah, yeah.
Man is a
yeah.
fallen creature, yeah.
It's a fallen creature. There's, for example, tribalism will never cease. The evil in man will never cease. Irrationality will never cease. And all these utopias, they do not take it into account. Or they have some idea of re-education, you know, of making everybody educated to be equal or to be non-tribalistic or whatever. So here's a tradition. And especially in Germany, the post-war conservatives, for example, one famous guy was the anthropologist Arnold Galen. He would have this very cold anthropological realism. He said, come on, let's look at how people actually are, not how they are supposed to be. The left always has ideas how people are supposed to be, but how are they? You know? And you have to take it into account. And this becomes obviously a problem when you say, okay, we have here 2 million Arabs. We want just them to flood the country. And if you assume that this will not cause trouble, you are not a realist. You're just dumb, right? So many people who were not right-wingers at all, they would say, isn't this a bit, you know, too much? Shouldn't it be slower? Shouldn't it be fewer people? Or, you see?
Yeah. I mean, maybe just 1 million.
Yeah, maybe just... Yeah. I mean, I give you some. There's a right wing, a left wing politician in Germany, which I absolutely admire and respect. Her name is Sarah Wagenknecht. She's a true intellectual, and I don't agree. Obviously, I don't agree with her on many things, but she's an absolutely upright, intellectually honest person. And she was being deemed as a right wing populist back then because she said this immigration goes to the expense of the German working class. And a country cannot integrate so many people and all these things. These are realist assumptions. These are just, they're not even nationalist, but these are realist thoughts. You know, it says we cannot overload the system with so many immigrants. And she is now a critic of COVID, of vaccination mandates and all that. So she's very rational, realistic person, right? So this was the second line to go back, utopians and realists. You see, the first line was trust or distrust in the media, utopian or realists. And the third line was a bit more abstract. And this is the classical globalist versus populist, nationalist, particularist, identitarian positions. You know, there can be variations here, you know, but these are roughly the positions. And now what I see happening in the COVID crisis is that I see these 3 points returning, but on a different level. So what happens is the government has kept the idea, who is the enemy? The enemy is the right winger. And now they have all these people who are not right wingers at all, but who are against COVID restrictions and vaccine mandates. And the government labels them as right wingers. It says, you're all right-wing, far-right extremists, you are Nazis, you're dead. This is what the government is doing. It's curious. Yeah? It's curious. But this is exactly what we described in our book back then. And I see that the right-wing camp is almost completely, at least here in Austria and Germany, almost completely on the side of the anti-vaccinators and the anti-measures. Not all, you know, but almost all of them. I know. You know, there are a few who haven't got the message. We can talk about those. And I see that there has been almost all the left-wingers, all these people who were left-wingers in 2017 are now on the side of lockdowns, restrictions, vaccinations. Crazy.
It's,
in Austria,
remarkable. Yeah, it's remarkable how consistent this is. I think in Britain there are more right-wingers who are pro-vax. But there are almost, like, if you were to read The Guardian or The Independent or just the BBC, all of them, all of the journalists are pro-vax, lockdown,
but
everything.
But then, here's the fascinating phenomenon. There are, now you disappeared. There are substantial, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, okay. I just didn't see. There are substantial parts of the left wingers who are going on to the anti-vax sides. I mean, in Britain, you have this guy Russell Brand, I think.
I didn't know he'd done that.
So he's on the COVID critical side there, and several others. I don't know. We discussed, for example, Neil Oliver. I don't know if he would be considered a liberal or leftist or so before.
But I think he was just middle of the road, sort of ordinary guy. He was a television historian and I think archaeologist. He used to do history documentaries. Definitely not far right. Nothing like that.
But you see, he's an example of what I call the realist line because he has a common sense, you know. I love his videos, you know. I mean, also I see this man is an honest man. You wrote about him once. You compared him favorably to Douglas Murray, you know, who's more like a phony. I think this is a man who is really rational, human. I mean, he sees everything, what's happening here.
He's a decent man. And
he's absolutely.
His honesty comes from his decency.
Yeah,
I think it would offend him to be dishonest about something.
And I have the impression that any really decent person, this is the test, would be on the side of the critics of the restrictions and of this whole policies, you know. And there are also quite a lot in Germany and in Austria who were more middle of the road or who were more left wing or so, who defected on this side of the. So it's really what happened here is now we have again a split in society, and the side who is against the state is again called the right wing side, but this time it is much larger. It's much more heterogenic inside, and we have a real fascinating, what's the word in English? In German, it's Querfront, is when left and right, you know, strategically go together to fight a common enemy.
Yeah,
We have it happen. We have a Querfront. We have right wingers, left wingers, libertarians, all sorts of people. It's fascinating, right?
Yeah,
and. Here's the thing. It's based on decency.
Actually, that reminds me that reminds me of a pun I came up with. I think the term you're looking for is unholy alliance, where unlikely partners partner up, and someone said it's like a marriage of convenience to up against that, and I said you might call it a clot gun marriage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well. It's more than that, I think. Philosophicat, she said in her stream something to the point that we have to align with everybody who is against this Leviathan, you know, this big beast.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I agree. Beast, yeah. And people took that very, well, some people took it very badly. And, you know, this is a complicated issue, and I don't want to try to summarize it here off the cuff. But I think she is right in that this is the issue of today. I mean, we could go into this later, maybe. But I don't know. Well, I don't know if she was meaning we have to ally with Islam or, you know, the Chinese immigrants or something. I think she just meant this is. You know, I think her main point was this is the main.
The thing
issue
is,
today.
You know, the distinction foe and friend. And now, to me, everybody is my friend for this time being, who is against this beast. I tell you this, you know, and everybody, I accept no right winger who goes and tells me you need to get vaccinated is an enemy. He's a traitor to me, an enemy. This is no time. The discussion is over. You know, we are middle of the war now, and now this is this one thing we have to defeat. This is my opinion, because everything else is just a subset of it. If this
Let's get into why this is so important. There are various things that came up that I thought about bringing up with you. So I'll just go through them quickly, and then we can get to why it matters so much.
Okay.
So you mentioned that the pro-vax side are very angry, and it reminded me of there was a testimony written by a girl who had been an SJW in like 2015, 2014, and she was saying that her main memory of that era is that she was constantly angry.
Yeah.
And it just reminds me of this, because now you've got these vaxxers who clearly are very angry, and they're driven to hate people like us. Now, I don't really hate them. I just pity them, and I just, you know, want to get through to them. I don't hate them. I just think they're misled. But they hate us. I mean, I think there's far more of this contempt and loathing. You see them saying stuff on Twitter and whatever about what should be done to us. We should be forced. We should be punished. We should suffer. You know, and it's weird. I don't know. There seems to be a link here between a utopian. You drive somebody to have a utopian idea or a totalitarian idea. And then the result is that they're not calm. The result is that they're angry.
Yes.
It seems to be a common thing there.
Yes. It's the same here. And it's also fueled by the press. I mean, all these people who write their opinion pieces in the press, most of them are liberals or, you know, green voting kind of people. And I have seen them salivating with hate during the migrant crisis. You know, they had their own subset of Untermenschen now they could hate. You know, these were the dirty, unwashed East German right-wingers or populists or whatever. And the way they would speak of these people was really in dehumanizing terms. And these are all these, you know, Orban, liberal kind of people who feel very, who feel they're very enlightened and very humanitarian and so. And I could see so much hate in them for groups who would disagree. And now I see the same thing, only they have shifted their focus. And conveniently for them, there is an overlap. So those people who they hated, they are still there and they have become more because more people have joined them in the disagreement. And the hate towards these unvaccinated or the refuseniks or those who criticize the measures is so intense and so cynical. Some guy in Germany, he wrote, you know, years ago, they would say, AfD is splitting society. You know, they're splitting us apart. You know, we must not be divided. They're dividing us. Dividing, this is the word. You know, they're dividing us, you know. And now they're writing pieces that say, yes, society must be divided, you know, but it's not a real division because it's not one half here and one half there. It's just a tiny, nasty, stinking group we have to get rid of, like an, you know. So, and this rhetoric is fueled up now every day. This talk about, we have now, in Germany, they have a new chancellor now, you know. And if you think Merkel was bad, I mean, she was one of the most terrible persons in history, probably. But this new guy is not any better. Huh? And he already had a speech where he said, they must not terrorize us. This is what they're saying. They say, the unvaccinated are terrorizing us. You know, they're just a tiny minority. How can they do it? You know, and he said, we will go with all the power of our democratic state against them. And so, and this is beyond projection. This is beyond gaslighting.
It's like when, you know, a sociopath projects their traits onto you. It's like, you can't believe it. You know, it's like they've hurt you, they've worked against you, they've sabotaged you. And now, they're saying that you've done all of that to them. It's like, you can't believe it. You just can't believe the gall. And so for this guy to say that the anti-vaxxers are terrorizing the rest of the German population.
This is the exact wording to use. The exact wording to use. Huh? And I think they are actual sociopaths. I mean, there are theories about how people in power are often sociopaths, how we live in a sociopathocracy, so to speak. And I believe it by now. I mean, and at the same, they made this guy Minister of Health in the new government in Germany. And he has become the face of pandemic hysterics in the media ever since. His name is Karl Lauterbach. You can look him up. And this guy, he has these bad rotting teeth and he has this pale face and he looks sick. This guy, he looks physically and mentally ill.
I know
about all these memes, you know. It seems to be the big trend, you know. They make the most incompetent people heads of departments that they have no business in. And this is, what should I say? It's a diabolic inversion. It's really diabolic. Like, you know, in the beginning of Macbeth, you have the witches and they say, so foul is fair. Foul is fair. And this is the motto of Satan, of evil. You just put everything upside down. And then you are the statist, the terrorist. You know, he's pressuring a minority group by now, which feels like, you know, no laws on their sides anymore. Media is not on their side anymore. They are demonized. They are attacked. They're being hated. And then you have the head of the state saying, they are terrorizing us. Why are they terrorizing us? You know, they say things like, they're keeping our society hostage. Because on the premise that if they all would get vaccinated, the pandemic would be over, which you can see by now is just a lie. It's absolutely.
That's the other thing. That's the other thing, that they've got this fictitious idea that it would all be over if everyone just got vaccinated. But that clearly is not the case because the virus is going to mutate and mutate and mutate.
The thing is, I mean, it must be clearly said the virus cannot be contained anymore. It's impossible to contain a virus like this. And with vaccinations, it's impossible. Also the flu. I mean, you can have flu vaccinations. They work quite a bit, but you have to renew them. But it doesn't make flu viruses disappear. The coronavirus will be there for thousands and thousands of years. We have to accept it. It's fated. Yeah, this is the only way out to see this. And everybody who's telling you the virus can be controlled or contained is just lying. It's not working. Yeah, it's just keeping the panic and the hysteria up and up and up again. And I got lost here a bit.
It's just not a big deal. The death rate is like 0.4%. Overall, you know, so if it's going to be with us for thousands of years, big deal. It's just another thing that people will die off in the 80s.
The premise that it's over when everybody gets vaccinated or the vaccinator to blame the virus is still here is just wrong. Because by now we know that the vaccines don't work very well, that people can get infected and can transmit who have the vaccine. So what's the point? There's no point here. The only way you can justify vaccines is for self-protection. But this is something everybody has to decide for himself, you know. And if I say, okay, I'm not in a risk group, if I get it, it won't be that bad. So I just take the chance. Why can't you accept it, you know? And there's this mania to force everybody. And now here comes the thing. It's the government who's taking society hostage. And he says, no, it's not us. It's them. Because they're forcing us to do that. We are forced to do these lockdowns because there's no other way scientifically. You know, we follow the science and the science says you have to do a lockdown, which is just bullshit. It's a lie. And it's scapegoating. It's like textbook totalitarianism. Like everybody got taught in schools in reading Orwell and all that kind of shit. And you never understood it, you know. Now it's really happening, and it's fascinating to watch it from some point of view.
It certainly is. That's the thing. I think that people did understand it. The scary thing is that they did understand it, and now they've just forgotten all about it. Now the program has been updated, so to speak. So I think they did. How did it happen? Because people are herd animals. I think that's... They're conformists. So.
But my answer is this, because the fear of death has been triggered. And this is the key to power. And it's really easy to evoke a fear of death in our society because it's spiritually empty. And, you know, beyond the surface, you just knock a bit and you find all this weakness and this complete lack of any spiritual basis. And even though we are one of the most protected societies in history, people live longer than ever, they have more food than ever, they can get medications, and they are more afraid than ever before, you know? I remember I read some pieces about the Spanish flu of 1918, and this was really a huge epidemic where many, many people died. And you did not have a media to tell you there's an epidemic because people saw it. And it lasted it would be already over by now if it was COVID. COVID is lasting far longer. And the thing is that the response wasn't nearly as hysterical as today, because people in that time, they were more hard-boiled. They had harder lives. They came to the fucking World War I. They were used to dying, and you know, they had a different outlook on life. You know, they didn't expect so much as we do. You know, we expect so much from life. We are so protected, and at the same time, we get scared so easily. And this is the way it happens. People got scared of death, and this is how they, you know, are hooked on this thing. And I see, you know, it's not only the vaccinated are angry; they're also scared. And this is something that puzzles me. I mean, most people I know are either, you know, unvaccinated or just got the vax because they had to, you know? And I know many people who also had COVID by now, many, you know, but nobody is as afraid as these people who have their three booster shots and they're hiding in their apartments and they're wearing masks all the time, you know?
I mean, I heard about a guy who just literally never leaves his house, his flat, and when he does, he sprays his door handle. I mean, for real. And this is a guy, I think he's in his 30s, you know?
Yeah, the vaccinated people I know are far more afraid than the unvaccinated people I know. This is
well,
crazy.
That makes sense, though, doesn't it? Because they're not afraid, therefore they haven't got vaccinated. It does. It's consistent.
True. And this anger and frustration, of course, is it's a consequence of being fed a lie and being fed all these promises that don't work out. Because obviously, by now, every idiot should realize the measures don't work. You know? The lockdowns don't work. The masks don't work. The virus just goes on and on every,
And that's like the other thing. The other thing is, it's now been nearly 2 years. How scared can you, for how long can you be scared? You know, at this point, it would have killed you a year and a half ago if it was going to. You're probably all right. I mean, the variants, but again, for how long can you live in fear? I mean, at some point, surely you've just got to fucking accept it and get used to it. Move on.
Absolutely. I mean, also there's this saying in German, zu viel gefürchtet ist auch gestorben. If you are afraid too much, you have also died. You say, I mean, it's just no use of being scared all the time. You just, the best thing you have to have is faith, trust. People who are scared, it weakens their immune system. It makes them sick in also many other ways. I mean, the lockdowns have harmed people in many more ways than just COVID. COVID is not the only sickness on this planet, you know.
And
everybody's acting if it's the only sickness that matters, you know.
Yeah.
Why? Yeah. There's no reason, in fact, why it should matter more than any other.
No. And of course, this is a new thing that's emerging now. The fact that people are now dying of things that would have been prevented 3 years ago, because they would have been getting tests, they would have been getting treatment, whereas because of COVID, none of that's happened. So, I mean, you know, when you think of how evil this all is, it's just incredible. Yeah. There are literally people just dead who should be alive today.
The side effects, they're killing people, they're harming people a lot. That's quite evil. I mean, in Vienna, the unvaccinated, they get letters from the government and they make appointments for vaccinations for you. So you get a letter that says, oh, your date for vaccination has arrived. Hoo-ha! And then they tell you when to come. I mean, it's not, you just can ignore it. There's no legal basis to this. It's just psychological. So you get this. And then when you turn this paper on the other side, they have some, here are the common vaccination myths. You know, this is the word they use now a lot. They even don't say conspiracy theories, they say conspiracy myths, you know.
Right,
because a theory at least can be true or not, you know, but the myth, you know, is just made up and stuff. And then they have all these points
Martin Licht myth.
Martin Lichtmess, Lichtmess.
Go on.
They have all these points about how the vaccines are safe and effective, and you read it and it's just straw man and it's just lies, you know. For example, they have one thing. Question, is it true that you get a microchip injected by the vaccination? It says, no, it's a conspiracy theory. And then you say, okay, maybe not by the vaccination, but the fun thing is you saw it in Sweden, they already started doing this.
Yes, it's obviously. Klaus Schwab has said it in public. He said it at a conference that one day they want this, and it's not going to be 50 years from now or 100 years. It's obviously going to be sooner than that.
But this is not even the most. Yeah, but this is not even the most important thing when it's about, you know, deciding against the vaccine. So you have these lies from the government, and what's scary for me is you are not able to object anymore. They say, for example, from our chancellors. We had three chancellors. I told you the one before the one we have now, the one who was the shadow chancellor of Kurz. When he introduced the lockdown for the unvaccinated, you know, the unwashed, the segregation, the Negroes, so to speak, he said he explicitly framed it as a punishment. He said, unfortunately, there are many people, even if we had disinformation campaigns, they are still refusing, and this is why we have to do it. You know, he wasn't even talking about medical reasons. he was really framing it as a sort of punishment because you did not obey. And then my question is, okay, why are you giving out this information in the first place if I can read it and say, okay, I got this information, I disagree, no thanks. This is not an option anymore. You know?
Say, we gave you the information. What's your problem? It's safe and effective. Didn't you see? Didn't you see? It's there. It's a myth. No, you won't get chipped, except you will be. You see?
Yeah. They should employ you to do the propaganda videos. It'd be hilarious.
I should do mock propaganda videos. Wouldn't this be great? Lichtmess is also advising you to get. I will be having a Doctor Strangelove voice and so, Mr. President, you will get vaccinated or you will die of the Omicron variant.
How you learn to stop worrying and love the vaccine.
Yes, yes, yes.
Well, what were we going to go into? Angry. COVID as a new religion. Now, this is something that you and I have discussed. There are the sinners, the apostates, the priests, the rituals, and the doctrine. Now,
I have a deja vu. We had a similar conversation a year ago.
I was wondering if we brought this up last year because
isn't that depressing? It's depressing. Yeah.
Well, but, I mean, things have evolved this year, but it's difficult to keep track of at what point things occurred to me and entered the discourse and so on.
I mean, everything I would see now, I already saw a year ago. It just got worse. Or it just happened precisely as I was afraid it would, you know, the joke about conspiracy theory, they become true after a few months, you know. Conspiracy theory is being right a few months ahead, you know. And after a few months, this becomes true. And I saw it coming. I mean, you know, you remember that story when I saw the guy on the street with the mask. But the story was like that I read in a paper that they would introduce a vaccine passport, a mandatory passport. And this is just when the campaign started. You know? Nobody was talking at that point about mandates. And they had all kinds of promises. They said, wow, by summer, we will be back to the old normal. You know, if we do that, it will be over. All these promises. You know?
It's important to emphasize this. They were explicitly saying that two shots of the vaccine and we can open up society, stop social distancing, stop wearing the masks. We're never going back to the world of 2019 for some reason, but nonetheless, it will be much. It'll all be over. All this terrible era that we've had to go through. Just two shots of the vaccine, and that's that.
I have kept the papers. I have an archive. I have a whole box of papers I've kept from last year. And when I look at the papers from this date last year, it's funny. It's déjà vu. Last year we had Delta variant. Now we have Omicron variant. And you have all these gay names of strange variants, and they're all terribly dangerous and so. And you have, but I also see the promises they made a year ago. And all of a sudden, they found out the vaccines, they just don't.
But I'll tell you something that's definitely changed since this time last year.
Mm-hmm.
They were saying two shots and that's it.
Yeah, that's what they said.
I can't remember when they first said there might need to be a booster shot.
I think it was in summer this year, because in Israel they started very early. They were the vaccination.
Yeah, they're now on the fourth
champions. Yeah. And they were the first to notice the decline of the vaccine working. And I think it was in summer or so. You know, they started vaccination in January, had many people already. So I think I have to look it up. But definitely this was the promise. And now this was a year ago, right before Christmas. And I read this in the paper. They're going to introduce mandatory vaccine passports. I got so angry, you know. I said, come on, they can't actually do this. So I have to take a breath of fresh air. So I walk out on the street. This is the deja vu now. I'm telling the same story again. And I see this dumb idiot, you know, in the middle of the night.
I know.
With a fucking mask. And the whole street is empty. And I just...
But it shows you how scared people were, and I guess still are. I mean, to be fair, I don't see as many people wearing it now. Although when I went up to Scotland, it was like going back a year in time. Up in Scotland, they're all, every shop you go into, everything.
I think it's different. I think it's different in England, because in Austria, it's mandatory to wear in public transport and in shops. So you see the masks very often. And one thing I notice, whenever the propaganda level rises, I see more people on the outside wearing the masks.
It's amazing. I mean, there's such a correlation between the propaganda and how people behave. Such an eye-opener. Sorry, go on.
And they get more aggressive. I notice when they spot somebody in the subway who doesn't have a mask on, then they get aggressive more, you know. So it stirs up these kind of aggressions and fears, and it works, you know. This is one thing that really impresses me much about it, how much it works, you know. And when I talked these days to people about, you know, do we have hope with this pass, you know, mandatory vaccine law, and one said to me, well, there will be a people's vote, you know, they call it Volksabstimmung, you know, that people, this is something you can do in Austria. If you have a really important issue, you can make a Volksabstimmung, a people's vote. I said, I'm rather scared of this, because a large part of my compatriots, a very large part, you know, maybe the majority, they seem to be easily manipulated. I mean, here's the ambivalence about what I told you about this nationalist or patriotic aspect of it. You know, I see that the protests in Austria, they take a very patriotic coloring. And the message is clear. It says, we are the people, you are just the politicians, you know. But on the same time, I mean, I feel very alienated from most of my compatriots, you know. I mean, I feel, I have really, right now, I feel much more the connection to anybody who is against this, just because he's against this, than to another person because he's my compatriot, you know. I have become to despise them. Many of them I come to despise them, you know? And I understand.
But I mean, it's obviously important not to give in to hate. And so it's funny for us to be saying
hate,
that.
Hope not hate. And that's for you. Oh my God.
But it is true, you know.
I reserve my hate. I have lots of warm, cozy hate in my heart, and I reserve it for politicians and the press, all these lying traitors.
I just can't believe that we're reduced. Like, you and I are the ones who have to say to people, don't give it to hate.
I tell you, this is an important thing, that there is no, you know, sometimes people try to frame the situation as a sort of mirror thing. You see, the vaccinated against the unvaccinated, they have equal hate. Everybody says we are on the side of science, you know. It's like a mirror situation. But the thing is, on the surface, yes, but I believe in such a thing as truth, you know. Truth is important, and I think absolutely clear, truth is mostly on the side of the anti-vacciners. Absolutely, science, truth, and everything, and also decency. And I noticed this very thing, that the hate on the side of the, or the anger on the side of the unvaccinated or the refuseniks or so, is not as intense as on the other side, because we understand the other side. Some of them have been there, you know. And I see, you know, there's a lot of tension going on now in families and relationships. I hear it everywhere now at Christmas, you know. People, parts of the family, they say, you cannot come to the Christmas party because celebration because you're unvaccinated, you know, or some demand, you have to get tested before you come. And families really got torn apart. Relationships, families, friendships get torn apart all over this country because of this issue. And I see that the side of the unvaccinated, the critics, they don't want this to happen. They're always the ones who reach out, always, almost always. They say, oh, come on, can't we get along? I mean, are we still so different just because we received the vaccine? You are not a different person. But it's I must really say, most of the aggression is from the vaccinated, who are also believing that those who are not vaccinated are dangerous, are spreading a virus, are untrustworthy.
It's like a cult. I mean, it's
like a cult. Yeah? It's like a cult. Yeah?
They've been indoctrinated to believe that those who are not in the cult are a danger to them. And not just a physical, biological danger. I think there's also a sense of these people are evil. You know, these people are these anti-vaxxers are in the grip of evil.
Yeah. They believe this. But I have the opposite impression. I mean, I don't know if I should get into this, but, you know, I have experienced it also myself, you know, with an old friend, you know. I told you the story privately, you know, it, you know, but I mean,
well, you've also written about it publicly, so
yes, a bit, yeah, but you know, there are more details. But the thing is, I don't think he's evil, you know, I just think he got, for some reason, something snapped inside him. He got so scared of the vaccines, he's so in the propaganda thing, that I just don't recognize him anymore, and I don't want to break up with him. I mean, I have also friends who got the vax, and I was disappointed, and I felt a sort of alienation to them. But I would never, it would never mean for me to break the friendship, or, you know, to get scared of them, because it happens. You know, some people are scared of the vaccinated because of a phenomenon called shedding, that you can transmit the vaccine through your skin or so. I'm not afraid to get infected. I'm not afraid to get infected by the vaccinated. I'm not playing this game to afraid of other people. This is silly.
Well, was that not debunked? The thing about vaccine shedding.
I'm not sure. I think there's some truth to it, but I don't care about it anyway. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But the thing is, so I did feel an alienation because everybody who did take the vax has already a foot in the door, is already in the grip of the system. And it's harder to get out if once you are in. So I see some of them, they told me, no, I won't do it a third time. Or with some of them, I talked and I told them about the issues with it. And they said to me, no, I'm not, I don't think I will do it a third time. But I'm not sure if they will have the willpower now that they are already in it. You know, once you are in it, it's harder to get out. And some are in it and they're quite comfortable in it. They said, I had no side effects. It worked well. I don't worry about the issue so much. You know, so, you see, so the system has already a grab on everybody who got it, even if he doesn't believe it. It's already there. The grip is already there. The grip is already there.
Yeah, this is something I said, that they're sort of touched by it once they've had the vaccine. But of course, that is a psychological thing as much as anything else. I mean, yes, it's physical. It's a vaccine. Yeah. It's injected chemical. Yeah.
But it's more also
psychological.
Mm. Yeah. They have to justify it after that. Even for themselves, you know, it's hard to admit you made a mistake, right? And once you are in there, and once you got used to doing it, the process. So this is why I very early on, you know, a year ago, I had discussions with friends about the tests. They did this testing. They started to do this testing, you know. And I agree. I remember a talk with a friend who said, this is just to prepare us psychologically for the vaccines. The tests are a sort of first run, you know, this idea, you have to prove that you are healthy, even if you don't have any symptoms, prove it. This is a completely crazy new idea. And once you got people used to do this testing all the time, they were psychologically prepared for taking the vaccines. You know? So some people ask me, okay, I understand the thing about vaccines, but what's wrong about testing? I mean, and then I try to explain them. First of all, it's completely useless. I mean, these tests are not made for, they're just for laboratory research. Yes. They're not made for diagnosis. It's insane to search for a virus in people who don't have symptoms. I mean, where do you stop, you know? where do you stop? It's crazy. But I think more important is the psychological thing, that you accept the idea that you have to do a certain procedure in order to you know, go to your job or go shopping or go to a sports game or whatever.
Again, it just seems so religious to me, and I'm not against religion. I'm just saying that the tone of it seems religious. Like you've got to prove that you're a good person in order that you can't expect to be accepted until there's some test that you have to undergo first. There's some way to prove.
It's a baptism.
The
vaccine
thing,
is a baptism,
or that you're holding the church, or that you've got the cross around your neck, or that you're carrying the Bible or something. It feels like that level of commitment. It feels like that it's something that serious and solemn for people. I can easily imagine it. Well, I think it already is like that. I think that people are amenable to the idea of the COVID pass because they take it all this seriously. And it's not just a practical thing like proving that I've been vaccinated. I think there's also an element of morality about it, like, yes, don't worry, I am a good person, I have done the right thing for the community.
I talked about this book I wrote with Caroline, Living with Leftists, and one major point we made about the importance of virtue signaling for the left. And how you know, adopting leftist opinions is a social status signaling, and it's similar now with confirming to the COVID measures and especially the vaccine. It's to show that you're a good, rational, responsible person within your peer group. You got your social status uplifted and all that. And I see it on Twitter. The Austrian liberal blue checks, you know, all these journalist assholes, and I know I've been known them for years. Yeah, once asshole, all every time asshole. They have been assholes ever since, but they have been harping on ever since what good people they are. You know, I just don't see they are good people. That they say, as a common argument I hear against the unvaccinated, they are narcissists, they are egoistic. You know, they don't have a feeling of solidarity and so on.
And again, fact, this is just projection.
It's like, complete.
We just want to be fucking left alone.
Yeah,
they're the ones who are narcissistic and egomaniacal.
Absolutely. And I give you one example. There's this guy. He's the chief editor of a weekly paper in Vienna, the Falter, which is a leftist paper, which all the bobos read. And he recently posted on Twitter, "I'm on a train from Vienna to Venice, and there's no mask mandate in the cabins. I'm now on the toilet," you know? He spent the whole night in that train on the toilet because other people in the cabin were not wearing masks, you know? And this guy's also vaccinated up his ass until it, you know?
That is pathetic.
And it's so pathetic. So this guy is so scared about his miserable little health. And this is a guy in his mid-40s. I mean, he's not a risk group in any way. And he's so fucking scared. He hides in the toilet and he posted a picture of that fucking toilet in the train.
You know, imagine if one day there is a common understanding that all of this was nonsense, and then he has to remember that time.
When he did that. And I can see it, almost all of them, they are neurotic about their health, you know,
that's
and
the
about
word,
this
neurotic
thing. It's in fact all about themselves. It's not because they are feeling solidarity for other people, for people who are in the ICUs and so. It's not about that at all. It's just about their own miserable self and about virtue signaling within their group. And this is what they have done ever since in the migration crisis, just the same shit, you know? The same people, the same kind of shit. And this virtue signaling thing is very powerful. If you assign social status to an idea, it becomes irresistible for many people, you know? It's a sign of social upward mobility, and people think they will appear clever or intellectual if they adopt these kind of ideas. This is how it works. You know?
Sophisticated, intellectual, educated, cultured, and good. I mean, all the good stuff, you know, all the things that people want to be is the same stuff, that same reasons that they're liberal and pro-mass immigration and whatever.
And this is why they talk about the science and rationality all the time. They don't even know what those words mean. You know, this is ridiculous. I mean, if you look it up, if you look people who criticize this, the science is clearly on the side of the critics. Absolutely, totally. This is what makes it so crazy. And this is also what makes it so, I don't know, so fascinating to me. When I have this discussion, for example, with nationalists from other countries, I mean, take American nationalists. I mean, America is different because this is not centralized. And in every state, you have a different situation. In some states, they don't have any measures at all. You know, in New York, the liberals are more terrorizing people. In Florida, nothing is happening. So it doesn't surprise me that all these American nationalists, they are still on their favorite issues like race things or GQ things or whatever, and they don't see the COVID thing as such a big issue. But if you are here in Europe and now in Austria, it's just right in front of you. It's so big. You can't get away, and it's scary.
That really brings us back to the issue of why it's so important. Let me just get something to eat, because I haven't eaten for a few hours. So I'll be back in like 10 seconds. Okay, don't worry.
Okay, so I get off as well.
Okay. Oh, he's still away. Oh, there he is. Excellent. Sorry about that. Right. So we wanted to get onto why it's so important, because I think this is something that, and I'm starting to wonder about it myself. Are we too obsessed? And are we losing sight of other issues? But the way I see it is I can't imagine talking about what we used to talk about in 2017-18, because it's just so inappropriate. It just feels it feels inappropriate. It'd be like saying in the middle of a thunderstorm, so what should we do when it's sunny again, instead of worrying about the current bad weather.
Yes, I mean, a year ago in Vienna, early November, we had some Islamist guy killing people, which happened the first time in Vienna. We had been expecting it during the migrant crisis. You know, there were lots of terrorist attacks all over Europe. And belated, it happened. It was just some crazy asshole. I mean, they were making researches about extreme Islamist networks in Austria and some religious groups and institutions and mosques and so. But I must say, it didn't affect me almost at all. I thought, wow, these were happier times when we were worried about Islam, you know, and about Islam taking over. I mean, there was
But is that irrational, though? Because obviously that would be a radical change to society. So
it won't happen. For several reasons. I mean, I used to care about this more, let's say 10 years ago when I got into these issues. And the thing is, they just don't have, Islamists, they don't have enough competence or power to really take over our societies. They can create lots of trouble, they can kill people, they can, you know, tension and so. They are the sore thumb in multiculturalism. This is the one thing that never worked because Islam people were not, they were so hard to integrate into the whole thing. They were also annoying the leftists, you know, because they were, you know, anti-Semitic or homophobic or misogynistic. So there was always something not working here. And it's a bigger issue in countries like France, you know, where Zemmour, we talk privately about Zemmour. Zemmour in many ways is a fascinating phenomenon. And I would have been more happy about him a few years ago. I mean, what he's doing is he has the talking points about the great replacement, and he's mainstreaming them, and he has quite a lot of success, and he's also a well-known intellectual, so he's not dumb. He has written books about the suicide of France and all that, and so he's campaigning there. And in France, they have a much larger Islamic population than in, say, Austria, you know, compared to France. Austria is a heaven, you know. When I came back from Paris a few years ago, I had a trip in Paris, and I came home and I was kissing the ground and thank you God, it's a paradise here compared to what you see in Paris, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was the last time I was in Paris was 2002. I mean, it's very nearly 20 years ago, and you know, it was pretty exotic then. God knows what it's like now.
And it's even worse now. And of course, you know, I wrote a lot about France. I translated Jean Raspail, so I'm aware how this thing in France has much more tension. And if there would be some civil-like war clashes, it would be most likely in France, in Europe. I can't imagine it really in Germany or in Austria and so. And I see Zemmour campaigning with these great replacement style talking points. But I just, my honest feeling is it's like a distraction. It's like a time warp or so. It's like this is stuck in 2019 or so, you know. And another curious thing is, I get always sent from Paris, from Alain de Benoist, Elements, which is his magazine, the Nouvelle Droite, the New Right magazine, Alain de Benoist, you know, and I love him. He's a great writer. I owe him very much. But it was so curious. COVID measures are also terrible in France. In France, it's also basically a tyranny. And in Elements, I see occasionally some critical remark, but the last issue I had in my hands, the latest issue of Elements, it had an interview with some guy I have never heard before, and he talks about the fourth totalitarianism of modernity, and it's like 5 pages and not a single word about the COVID thing, not a single word. And he talks about totalitarianism, the fourth totalitarianism of the modern age. I don't know what the other three are, probably fascism, communism, so, you know, the usual suspects. And he doesn't mention it at all. And in the whole magazine, not a single mention. And then you have things about conservative revolution and all the old French New Right things. And it's like time has stopped in 2019. It's so weird.
It's really absolutely weird. And that's how I feel about the American, not all of it, but certain commentators from America, I think it's as if they haven't noticed the last 2 years has happened. It's really weird to me. I just don't know how you can do. I wouldn't feel comfortable doing it. You know, talking like, hey, so another refugees raped a white woman. Look, I still don't like it when that happens, but it's first of all to go on about it just feels sort of futile at this point. And it blackpills people. but also it's not this. I mean, okay, here's the thing. With mass immigration, you can understand, you can see the end point of it. It's going to be Europe isn't Europe anymore. It's not it's not European. It's not ethnically European anymore. That's a terrifying end point. But with COVID and the Great Reset, what is the end point? What's the long-term result of it?
Yeah, I can imagine a sort of Chinese-style government. It's a collectivism, a technocratic collectivism. I can imagine this pandemic measures going on forever, people getting used to masks or regular shots, booster shots. This is all now possible. People getting chipped. And here's the thing. If I imagine now, I would live in an ethnically homogeneous society now. If all the foreigners would be sent back to the countries where they came from, there would be no Islam. But at the same time, I would live forever in this insane regime, this insane technocratic collectivism. What's the point of it? You know, I just don't care about it if everybody's because everything that makes it worth it will disappear. Culture will disappear, you know. A real sort of rootedness and community will disappear. It will be replaced by an artificial collectivism. It's the same what philosophy Kat said in your talk, you know. And so I just wouldn't care anymore if everybody's ethnically homogenous, because it wouldn't make sense anymore. This is not an aim in itself. It's not an aim in itself. It's a way of living humanly, living in a real culture. But it won't be there anymore. It was just the dumbing down. It will be more censorship. It will be more indoctrination. And so this is just absolutely horrible. So I had this discussion with some people who said to me, well, I care about the Great Reset, but I care more about the Great Replacement, because, you know, the demographic argument, because once demographics are done, it's over and can't be undone anymore. I said, yes, that's true, but it's also the other way around. It's true. Once you got installed the system, it will be very, very hard to shake off, and you will have the production of Bargman. This is what it adds up, you know, this whole talk about Klaus Schwab, forced technological revolution. It will be more like super transhumanism for them, for the elites. That's how they imagine it. And the rest will become bargmen, you know, who live in their pods and who are directed from above and who are entertained and who are fed, but who have nothing more to do. This is the way it's going, very clearly. You know? And I don't think this must happen that way. But I can see it's going there, and it's an old thing. It's an old thing. Like if you read the first science fiction novels when they appeared in the end of the 19th century, dystopia started to creep in very soon. You know, 19th century was very optimistic about technology, but very soon writers like H.G. Wells and later Huxley, they realized that in technology inherent is the totalitarianism, because you start organizing society with techniques, technologies. You know, propaganda is also a technology.
Well, technology simplifies controlling, the act of control.
Yes. And it automatizes controlling, you know. It makes you given into mathematical, you know, schemes and algorithms and so. And everything that it's in Huxley, of course, in his genius book, Brave New World, everything that is really human, cultural, that this is just about to be destroyed, you know. So I have this argument with a fellow German right-winger, and he says, yeah, well, to me, the most important thing, nation, folk, you know, the people, family, said, good, but all these things will disappear under a Great Reset regime. They will just be eradicated, you know. This is a scheme to uproot people, to control them, and any other kind of opposition you will have to other issues. You say, okay, I'm against this, for example, LGBT agenda everywhere. Yeah, okay, this is part of, this is a subset of the whole thing. You know,
I like that. Yeah, in the future, that will have an impact on your social credit score, which might well affect your employability, how much money you get from, you know, UBI money.
Of course.
Where you can go in public. There, I wouldn't be surprised if bars and pubs and restaurants only accept people who have a certain level, a certain social credit score. And if you're below that level, you're assumed to be a social hazard. And so to keep their customers safe, they will keep you out.
This is what they do.
Why wouldn't they do that?
Yeah, it's already there. The social rhetoric: people feel not safe when somebody is around them who has opinions that don't, you know, align with the narrative or with the ideology that is now present. And certainly, also, I mean, we said it: the vaccinations are on a higher level. They are sort of admissions. You admit to an ideology if you get vaccinated. You know, you say yes. You submit. You know, it's an ideological thing by now. You know, it has ceased to be a medical thing by now. It is clearly an ideological thing for all sides, for those who refuse and for those who take it. Yeah? And this can be extended to other issues. Once it is there, it can be clearly. Next is climate change. They also talk about, you know, we need lockdowns for climate change. And so I see it in the press that the fear of climate change is being pushed again, you know.
And then they're moving on to that, I think. They're preparing after COVID.
And the fear of good old racism, it will be there again, you know. And so all the issues, you as a right, I would say to anybody who's right-wing, all the issues you care about, they are all subsets of this whole thing. When this whole thing is installed, opposition to nothing will be possible anymore, or will be very, very difficult.
Well, it will be unbelievably difficult. I mean, your life will be switched off if you voice opposition to these things.
You will be literally switched off, maybe, yeah? I don't know.
Possibly, but I don't think they'll do that. I don't think they need to do that. That's the thing. No, they don't. This is the thing. They just need
to kill your soul. They need to kill your soul.
It's the social penalties that that control people, and it's very effective. You don't need to kill them. You don't need to put them in a gulag. You can just switch their life off. Just make it impossible for them to do what everyone else can do, and then they've got a terminal case of FOMO.
Well, the rhetoric's already there. I reread all these articles saying make life for them as difficult as possible. You know, the unvaccinated have to suffer. I mean, all kinds of people. I mean, fucking Noam Chomsky. Noam Chomsky, he's 100 years old. He's the guy who wrote Manufacturing Consent. And now he's kill the Kulaks phase, you know. but, you know, he's not the only one. He's just one in that whole spectrum who's saying this. I see these rhetorics everywhere. Make their life hard, give them pressure, you know. So
Hanno Settel.
Hanno Settele. I know. He's an Austrian.
Austrian state media journalist. Mm-hmm. And this is a quote. You don't have to vaccinate all your children, just the ones you want to keep.
Yes. I know it.
This is incredible. Just out in the open. We are going to take your children away from you if you don't do what we're telling you to do. He's in the media, so we in the media will back up we'll defend the government when it takes your children away from you. This is.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's the kind of guy who thinks like this, who would on another occasion he wrote about protests, he said, round them all up, you know, police go in, you know. But that particular quote, I think what he was saying is more like, if you want your children to live, you have to vaccinate them. Otherwise, they will die of COVID. This is what he meant to say. This is what these people believe. What they believe. Yeah.
Okay.
And I know he's a terrible guy. I mean, he made a few years ago, he made a documentary on identitarians. And there was one identitarian activist She was a poster girl of identitarians back then. Now she has retired from the public, and she was interviewed by him. And she told me that he was a complete asshole. First, he was like nice and charming, and when the camera rolled, he went on with this nasty questions. You know, this you know, those you cannot answer properly without looking good or bad, and so this is just dumb. You know, and he was tricking her. You know, he's a professional in TV, and he was tricking her. So I know he's an asshole, and now he's one of those hardliners. Years later, you know. This is the thing. I recognize these same people again, you know. These people who were assholes back in 2016 are assholes now, and they're all now lockdown hardliners and pro-vaccination mandates and just freaking out. So I guess there's a continuity here.
There certainly is. Yeah. But that was another question I wanted to ask you. Why do you think there is such a... Because there's a continuity there, but there's also a continuity on our side. Why is it that so many, in the case of Austria, I'll use the terminology for Austria, why is it that, as you said, from the start of the COVID thing, the identitarians were on the anti-COVID side? It should be, you know, you can understand the argument that, well, if you care about your ethnic group, then you'll want the best for them, so you'll want them to get vaccinated. But no, from the start, and it's the same here, we were against it. Why do you think that is?
First, it wasn't entirely from the start. Here's a curious story I tell you. We go back into January 2020, and then the first rumors from China came. And I remember Martin Sellner, he made some tweets or videos where he said, oh, wow, we have to close borders now quickly. This is another globalist thing if you get this virus. And the first videos that were leaked on the net about people collapsing in Wuhan were strangely on right-wing channels. And here's the kicker, you know. The mainstream media responded with programs how right-wingers are trying to make us scared of the virus, you know. Crazy conspiracy theories. This is, you can find it all in the net. They wrote fact-checking sites where they said, oh, come on, the right-wingers, they are saying it's a killer virus. But in fact, it's not like that. And then in March 2020, when the lockdowns came, the positions overnight completely switched, you know, but immediately, you know.
I would love to travel back in time to March 2020, yeah. I would watch the TV every single day just to see the evolution over the course of that month, because I think it would be incredible to watch.
Yeah, the thing is, I'm working on a book with a co-author about the history of the lockdowns, and we did precisely that, you know. We traced back the media, also international media, especially we picked some American magazines and also Austria and Germany, and we traced exactly the evolution when the media switched and all turned into lockdown mode. And the crazy thing is, before that, they were into, wow, it's a conspiracy theory, right wingers are scaring us again. And then it was said, right wingers are trying. The funny thing is, first they said, right wingers are telling us to be scared of the virus, and then they said, right wingers are telling us not to be scared of the virus, you know. And and in both cases, the right wingers were the conspiracy theorists who wanted to sow distrust in the state and who had some, you know, cunning schemes of themselves. And
well,
so
the thing is, it did make sense, because I said the same thing at the start. It was like, okay, well, we don't know what this virus is. We don't know how dangerous it is. So let's close the borders. Definitely from China. It would be insane for us to be allowing people in from China.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Obviously, that's got nothing to do with hating the Chinese or whatever. It's just the virus is there. So why would you? So close the borders, and then we'll just wait and see. That's what I said for the first month or whatever. And, you know, it was rational.
By the information we had in January or February 2020, it was okay to say that, you know. And it's quite funny that you find these fact-checking sites in Germany who just switched completely what they said. Now, what they said in February 2020 is correct. You know, they said the virus isn't that dangerous. It attacks mostly the old or those who have already
other
underlying conditions and so on. And then they switched sides completely. You know, this, and how did it happen? It's fascinating.
And,
so
and that, that's the operation of power on the real world, isn't it?
It's yes.
What happens when power decides to just change the narrative?
Yeah, it shows somebody must have happened to change this narrative, and it goes very quickly. It happens very quickly, all of a sudden.
And when was it in March? Was it the 5th, the 10th, the 15th, the 20th of March? When did this change?
It was in the beginning of March when Italy was the first country to lock down. I don't know, in the first week of March or so, there were these scenes from northern Italy, which were very exaggerated, and Italy was the first country to lock down, and Austria was about 20th of March or so, yeah, Austria and Germany, you know. And I can tell you when I got suspicious. Maybe I told the story a year ago already, but you know,
you're such a good storyteller.
It was 1 week in the lockdown, you know, and we have this paper. It is what's it called? The Sun, you know,
tabloid.
A tabloid, you know, everybody reads, and it's currently called Kronenzeitung, which means crown, and crown means corona, so they could rename themselves into Corona Zeitung. So, and it was like I immediately noticed the propaganda was strange. Like they had these polls. Do you trust the government? Is the government a good job? Everybody said yes, you know. So Chancellor Kurz, he was like Colonel Kurz. He was like a god. He was doing the right thing. And then there was one detail. There's a song which is very popular in Austria by a singer called Reinhard Fendrich. And the song is called I Am From Austria. And this is our anthem. You know, it's the chorus is in English, but the lyrics are in German. And it's an expression of patriotism, which is a very popular song in Austria. And it's from the 1990s and so. And I read in the paper that there were curfews, you know, people were ordered to stay inside. And I remember at that time, it really worked. The streets were dead. And I read that the police are controlling whether people are staying inside. And the cars are driving through the streets. And in the loudspeakers, they're playing I Am From Austria, from Fendrich.
I think you did talk about this last year, because you were saying it was they were using patriotism
all of a sudden. I mean, I thought patriotism, you know, all of a sudden it was great because we have to stick together, we have to go through this together, all these rhetorics were up, and this was just such a surrealist image. The car would drive through an empty street, the policemen were controlling whether people stayed at home, at the same time they were playing this song. And this was the moment when I felt, okay, something is wrong here. Yeah, this is when I started to, you know, doubt whether all this is.
It's fascinating how everything is eclipsed by COVID, and that's a good example of it. How the old disgust at nationalism and patriotism goes out the window when we need to use people's patriotism to make them do something.
Yeah,
as another example would be in Australia. And I really should have got Philosophica to talk about this. I can't believe I forgot. They're putting the Aborigine people into these quarantine camps, which is unbelievable, like bad optics, because Australia has this regrettable history of being heavy-handed with the Aborigines. And it's something that they've spent decades apologizing for and hating themselves for. No, they just chuck them in. They just put them into these new places. Because everything comes second to COVID. Everything is subordinated to that narrative. It's really quite amazing.
But this is why I think it's great that the protests adopted the Austrian flag, because they are reclaiming patriotism for them. You know, this abuse of patriotism by the state and by the system, they are reclaiming it. This is a great thing.
And that's also an interesting thing in itself, to assert that there is a separation between the state
and the people.
The country, and yes, the yeah, people, the country. The country.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting, because I think that one part of the technocracy now is to assert that everything is under the control of the state, and the global state, the international state. And there really is no such thing as people folk culture.
Yeah, they want the population, but not the people. And strangely enough, they claim that they are the Democrats. You know, this word is overused. It has no sense whatsoever anymore. But they're saying we are the Democrats. The protesters are anti-Democrats, but they're doing the most democratic thing you can imagine, the only thing that is left for them to do. And we had this guy who used to be Minister of the Interior, now he's the Chancellor, and he said the protests are anti-democratic. What a weird thing to say. It doesn't make sense whatsoever. It only makes sense if you realize that they have adopted these words and these phrasings, and they have emptied it of their meaning. There's just the aura, the magic there of the word, you know, because democracy is good, democracy is the right thing. And then just, but we are the Democrats, we, the state, are the Democrats, you, the people, are not Democrats, except you do what we say. This is their tactics, and they have been doing it for quite some time. It also happened during the migrant crisis. You know, everybody who was against the refugee flood, he was not part of the folk anymore. You know, he was not a Democrat anymore. But this is an issue that can be as democratic as anything else, to let the people decide, do we want immigration? But here's the thing, and this has happened for a while, that the state is just deciding for you. He has a program. The state has a program, and the program is in sync with certain globalist, agendas. And all democracy is supposed to do now is just to say yes to it. So
Yes.
this is the only thing that is left for the people. And if you don't, you're not a Democrat. If you don't agree to the agenda, you're not a Democrat.
And if the democracy doesn't get the result desired, then it's not real democracy. It's been corrupted somehow. So
Yeah, they
remember in
can't.
the US election last year, we kind of fortified the democracy by rigging the election.
This was, wow, don't get me started, but I almost have forgotten it, this thing. It was a big thing, but I almost have forgotten it, you know. So this is how much they did it in Germany with AfD, but when they had in certain parts of Germany voting results, and they were retracted, and they did all kind of things that it would not work out. So you got the feeling even before COVID that any democratic measures you have, the regime will always find a way to just topple it, you know.
Well,
So
that's a good
yeah.
foreshadowing of COVID. It's a good
Yeah,
foreshadowing of
absolutely.
what it's going to be like once,
Yeah.
after March 2020, because at
Yeah.
this point the system exists purely to get done what the higher powers want done.
The system is completely rigged, and in case of AfD in Germany, they could have high results in some parts of Germany, but the rhetorics of Merkel and the government would be, yes, but they are not Democrats, they are anti-Democrats, therefore their election results, they don't matter, and they have to be questioned, and I missed the word, you know, they just retracted some results. It's too complicated to explain, but in the end, you know, everything stayed the same, even though if they had a substantial number of votes, and they kind of rigged it so in the end they wouldn't get into the government, and they would not in the local government in that part of Germany. And so you could openly see that whenever there is a result which is against their wishes, they have the means to change it and to stop it. So what shall you do? You know, I mean, this would be very demoralizing in people who honestly believe, wow, okay, we have worked hard to get all these votes, and in the end, if we vote the wrong way, the regime has the aims, or the means to just annihilate it. This is.
It's really quite remarkable to see it again, time and again. I've said that those words so many times throughout COVID because you just can't believe how good the system is at getting its. I mean, it was the same thing with the in America with the Derek Chauvin trial, where whatever happened, he was fucked. He was going to go to spend the rest of his life in jail, and the system suddenly becomes very effective, efficient, resourceful, to an unbelievable degree. I mean, when you think about all these screw-ups over the last 10 years, 20 years, and they'll say, well, there's just nothing we can do. We just don't know how to solve this problem. We just don't know how to close the borders. We just, it's impossible for us to keep the refugees out. It's impossible. But then when they want to get something done, they're incredibly good at it.
They were incredibly good in putting pressure against their own population for absurd restrictions during the pandemic, you know, and the police would enforce it. Something they would not dare, you know, when it was about borders and about criminal, illegal immigrants and all that. Now, all of a sudden, they had the strength and they had the good conscience to do it. Disgusting, frankly, no, really disgusting.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're going the easy way at the weak ones, you know, they would not dare to, you know, in Germany, they had these troubles with these Arabic gangs who built up whole subcultures, and it's hard for the police to get into. And this would take an effort and courage, but they were able to, you know, attack people who were walking in the park without masks, or illegal children's birthday parties. I remember I read a headline, illegal children birthday party busted by the police, you know, because it was against COVID restrictions. And what the hell, you know, this is what they can do. All of a sudden they feel strong against, you know, citizens who are, you know, haven't done anything wrong. They haven't done anything wrong or legal, and this is disgusting. Really disgusting.
I remember seeing a photo. Like, I'll have to look through my COVID memes collection, which at this point is extremely extensive. But there was a photo from Germany that came out, I don't know, in the middle of the lockdown last year, of a park bench, and it was a circular park bench, and they tied police ribbons all across it. I can't see it here. That's annoying. Because it was one of those images that stuck with you, like the one of in the American high school band where each of them is in a pod thing.
I mean, it was just, I remember that image, and I remember so many crazy things they have done, and that were forgotten later on. In the first lockdown, there's a park nearby where I live, and in the park there's some playground for children. And the playground for children was all, you know, with these ribbons and sealed off, and so you could not, no children on this playground. Yeah, it looked like that a bit.
That's the one.
I've seen it. Yeah.
Incredible. I mean, look how desperate they are that nobody should be able to sit on this park
this
bench.
This is deutsche Gründlichkeit, you know, German sorrowness. It's
absolutely
insane. Yeah. And I saw similar things on children's playgrounds within the park, you know, but the rest of the park, I mean, people would go there and children would play there. Just on this playground, they could not, you know, just on this playground were these ribbons. And they did not do it again in the next lockdown because they must have realized how absurd that was, you know. And there were many of those absurdities. At one point I lost track of them because they would sink down the memory hole. It was a bit embarrassing, you know. And when they first were imposed, you know, people were so confused. They didn't question it, or they wondered, what the hell is this, you know, and then they forget about it.
Yeah, I'll show you the other one of that high school band, just because I mentioned it. And it's so extreme. You just can't believe it. This is a guy trying to...
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. I mean, trying to play, a French horn or a tuba. Yeah. I can never remember which one it is. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that was going on last year.
Monty Python's Flying Circus is nothing. This is...
Yeah. I know. And the thing is, there is a danger of laughing about it and just making a joke out of it, because this is damn serious. I mean, if they can do then, you know.
There's one question I haven't answered yet. You asked me what is the reason why most right-wingers in Austria are in the camp of the critics. You know?
That's what I was going
from the beginning, you know. And my answer was not totally from the beginning, you know. But as soon as it really started with the lockdowns, and here's the simple thing, I mentioned it before, this one line of polarization, trust in media or politicians. And in the right-wing camp, you have lost this trust way before COVID. Yeah? You were already disconnected with media and with the government long before that, because if you are a dissident, a right-wing dissident, you already knew that you could not trust the state and the media, that they were writing shit, because you had experienced it on by yourself, you know, what they wrote in the papers, you know, a year before COVID happened. 2019 was a terrible year, you know. There was the story with Martin Selner. There was a raid in his apartment 3 times. They accused him of being a terrorist. I remember this media campaign. He was in the media every day. He was the villain of the country. And so you already are disconnected to the media. And this is why most of the right-wing camp could not be reached, except for some people who, mostly older people, you know, mostly from the older conservative right-wing people who really got scared about their health. You know,
yeah.
They still believed, you know, and some of them still do. This is very strange. You know, just recently, I mentioned this. There's one important thinker for the new right. His name is Karl-Heinz Weismann in Germany, and he was the co-founder of Secession. He had a fallout with Kubitschek 10 years ago or so. And he's a man I did respect a lot. He's a great writer. He has written many interesting books. He's a school teacher, a high school teacher. So he's a professor. And he, in a conservative newspaper, they had a pro and con for vaccinations. You know? And he wrote the pro thing. And he was arguing with these old school conservative, you know, arguments like, the common good comes before the individual good, and the state has to take care of the people's health, and if necessary has to impose it. You know, the conservatism is a thing that traditionally used to think from the state and say the state has the right to impose authoritarian means, and so, and he was going on with that, complete with quotes from conservative thinkers from old times. But
this is something that we still hear, that we shouldn't be afraid of authority. It's libertarian of us to be afraid.
Yeah,
of authority.
And to oppose this is liberalism, or it's libertarianism, and so on. Yeah. But the thing is, he did not. This was another case of somebody who got stuck in 2019, who didn't understand how the world was changing. I mean, it starts with first, what is the medical argument for the mass vaccinations? There is none. He didn't seem to know it. It was, if the vaccinations, the only thing they do is they reduce your risk of having severe symptoms. This is not an argument enough to force people for general vaccination. This is only an argument for individual choice. And this is where it started. And all the other implications seems to have lost on him. He took up a large part of the narrative, that part that said, if we do this, the pandemic will be over. He really believed it. I mean, this is an extremely intelligent guy, one of the most intelligent people on the new right I know, and another very intelligent guy of the new right. He wrote a con, and he nailed it, you know, all the things that we were discussing now. He just said it. I said it's very dangerous. If the state is getting access to your body and is able to inject into you something you don't know what it is, it's not tested, it's unsafe, but by authority, the state is able to have this access on your body. He said this is very dangerous. Once you get into this thing, it's hard to get out. And so this is what the other guy, the con guy, said. And the pro guy, he was this very conservative, authoritarian, anti-liberal argument. And it was so deluded, you know. I got so angry at it when I saw it. And, you know, there was a similar piece on Countercurrents recently, which, you know, summed up all these sort of arguments, but it was written as if this man, whoever wrote it, got stuck in 2020, March 2020. This was the level of information we had in 2020. But by now, we should be more wiser than that. We should see where this leads. And this argument of saying, wow, this is liberalism or libertarianism to oppose, this is just insane.
You see, I think that there are certain conservatives who, and like that man you just described, the Secession founder, they think, and they thought, we just need to do this thing and then it will be over. So yes, they're approaching it in good faith, thinking that those in authority are good. They are virtuous. They're decent people. They're honest people. They're just telling us to do this thing and then it will be over. So
okay,
but why would I be difficult? And what I mean is there's something in the conservative mind, I think, that needs to believe that those in authority are okay, that the institutions are healthy. I think the conservative mind struggles to accept that, no, the institutions are really rotten. They're really corrupt. Yes. It's actually the truth.
The thing about Karl-Heinz Weismann is, and this is what troubles me most about his pro-vaccination piece, is that he knows the institutions are corrupted and occupied. You know, I found an article of his written a year before the COVID thing, and he would write, the state and our institutions are basically occupied by the enemy, you know, by our ideological political enemies, you know.
And yet, deep down, he doesn't believe it, I presume.
It seems so, because he was a fierce critic of the government and of the politics imposed by the German state. But there was still this belief, if we, the conservatives, could take over this machine of the state, these institutions, everything could become good because the institutions are good in themselves. It's just the wrong people running it, you know? And that is not entirely wrong, but you have to realize there's no way that we are getting hold of this institution anymore. They are firmly in the hands of the enemy, and they are using it to completely perverted motives, like everything, you know, schools, churches, the courts, the military. Everything is used for the ideology of the enemy to impose. And some conservatives, they still fall for it. They don't get it. They still fall for it. They believe, wow, but it's the state. It's the. They don't get it that this whole thing is entirely in the hands of the enemy. And you cannot trust them to be just correct on the vaccines. I mean, if you notice they're hostile to your people, if you say these are the same people who want to turn the people into a population, they're pushing multiculturalism, they want to dissolve the nation, everything that has come from the past. But on the vaccines and health, they are caring about us. You know, this is really just because they care about us. It's absurd to assume this. And here is a very nasty suspicion I had when I read this piece by Weismann. I thought, he's a clever guy. He's very intelligent. It's no way he can't have realized this. Maybe he is already accepting the inevitable and trying to cozy up with the upcoming regime, hoping that maybe he would be able to have his niche and do his thing. So I don't know if this is true, but it does always happens when there's change of power. There are certain types who are very opportunistic, and they deliberately know what they're doing here. He was writing this piece to sort of accommodate to the coming regime, possibly. I don't know, you know. So there's two ways. Either he's this opportunist and he knows better, or he just really has completely lost any grip on what's happening now. And both things are shocking. Both things are shocking, because I respect this man still very much, you know. And I also owe him a lot, but this was shocking. And for me, this is the line, you know, whoever is advocating for this vaccination regime is now a foe. I'm sorry, friend of foe.
I mean, I've had similar experiences where people I looked up to, people who were, you know, older, more sort of, more senior, who I used to respect, have let me down by having the wrong opinion, as far as I'm concerned, and so I can't take them as seriously as intellectuals as I or as social commentators as I used to, and I think there are people who have lost some credibility as a result of this, and it's a shame. It's a shame.
But this also goes to show how powerful this whole thing is that is happening, that even very intelligent people, they just get very delusional, they lose their grip, they are confused. And I think it's mostly a psychological thing, because, I mean, confronting this means that you have to let go a lot of illusions and a lot of things you cling to, which means that despair, you have to face despair. And I think I have been through black pill despair long ago, so I don't need to delude myself anymore too much. Right?
It's funny, actually, that you and I were both in a bad, and I won't go too personal here, but you and I were both in a bad way psychologically for various reasons just before this happened. And I think both of us strangely got back on our feet just before this happened. So for that year, like 2019, it was a terrible year for me, bad year for you. But we were okay just in time for this to strike. I find that quite interesting.
Yes, this is my personal touch. But I think I was in some way already prepared. I mean,
oh, of course, it relies on things from earlier in your life. I just mean that.
It now. Look, as a certain a thing, I just try to explain this briefly, but it's a big issue, in fact, a big issue. You know?
Okay, well, we'll end on this.
But if you have once in your life suffered a real crisis of depressions, a real one, you know, not just being a bit sad or so, but really a huge depression, like some dark night of the soul, as they used to say.
Yeah.
And if you go down and get up, you can get a lot of, I don't want to sound too pathetic. I mean, it's hard to live with this sort of disillusion you confront within a depression for most people. You know? It makes you vulnerable if you have this. And one of the things you learn is about mortality and also futility. Here's one. I mentioned one book which influenced me hugely, and I recommend everybody to read it, many years ago. It was by a sociologist called Ernest Becker, and the book is called The Denial of Death. And the basic theory is that all human culture, also philosophical system, religious systems, but also social status systems, like getting much wealth or getting much admiration, or so. He sees the root is the fear of death. This notion you realize, wow, you can die, and that's a real thing. And probably you are just here on this planet very coincidentally. You know, there might be no purpose to anything whatsoever. And to realize this is terrible for the human mind. It makes you crazy once you see it, but you cannot live with it. It's choking. We are human beings are programmed to see a meaning in things. We need a meaning in things. And he goes on to elaborate how the whole culture is a heroic attempt to give life a meaning. Of course, some may have heard it before in existentialist philosophy and so. And I have now, I'm more beyond Becker at this point, because at the core, he's quite nihilistic, because he doesn't really believe there's anything beyond death, and this is the final word. You know, he says people need a God, people need spirituality to survive, but the tragic thing is he doesn't get himself to really believe in that spirituality. He says it's good to believe, but it's just make-believe. You see what the problem is here? But what I'm aiming at is if you reach this point zero once in your life, this point zero, where you think, okay, this is it, it's done. You know, there's no meaning, there's no God, there's just death. It's also a sort of vaccination, a mental vaccine. It makes you immune to certain, if you are able to rise up, you know, and it's never over, because all your life you have to struggle with your mortality and with meaning and pain and all this. I don't want to sound like Jordan Peterson now, but you get what I mean. And now the thing is, if you are used to live with this point zero in your mind and this despair, you can suffer things that others can't. I don't know if I can make myself clear, but I can see through many delusions these conservatives have, and it would be terrible for them to see what I see. They would not be able to suffer it because they cling to it, but I not clinging to it anymore. I have let it go, and here I am still, and I can see clearly.
Yeah, isn't this a bit
you see what I mean?
Yeah, I think isn't it a bit like the story of the prodigal son, where the one who stays is good and well-behaved and virtuous, but he doesn't actually know about how cruel the world is. Whereas the one who goes out into the world is corrupted by it and so on, and hurt by it, but he comes back with that knowledge.
A bit like it, yes. But it's not precisely what I mean. Maybe we should discuss it some other time, but what is the root of people being delusional? Because it would be very, very hard for them to look at reality without that delusion. And now many things have changed where people cling to before 2020. And also conservatives, you know, ideas they had, many political ideas, many concepts, explanation. And now it's so hard to deal with it that this is now gone. Well, that we see something different now. You see what I mean?
The right-wingers variously believed in rationality, they believed in the state, they believed in science, they believed in decency, they believed that those in charge must be good, they have to be good. All of that has been rubbished over the last 2 years. Yeah. And I think that a lot of them will find that very difficult to, or impossible to accept.
I have to tell you something about last year, you know. During the summer, there was a bit of a COVID break. I mean, there was almost nothing happening in Austria except people wearing masks in shops. So the masks were only there to give you a feeling it's not over yet. You know, it was basically theater, right? Yeah. Right. And, but, you know, I remember it was a quite relaxed summer overall in this respect. But there was one thing that really troubled me. And, you know, in the US, there was this Floyd Chauvin story happening with all the Black Lives Matter riots. And at this point, for some month in summer, this troubled me much more than COVID. You know, remember, it was at the beginning of the whole thing. There was a summer break. And I followed closely these things in the US. And what was it that troubled me so much is that you could clearly see that the whole Floyd story was just a preposterous lie. This man was being treated like a saint, you know, and the policeman treated him rough, but it was clear there was no intention to kill him while a camera ran. And you had this deification of Floyd, you know, and what brought me into despair, you know, my brain didn't take it. It works, you know, a very obvious such a thing as a deification of this petty criminal, a guy who is nothing of a saint at all.
The dregs of the earth, like the worst of people.
Yeah,
just
and it works all over the world. And it there was no contradiction in the media whatsoever. Our media, they would just copy what CNN said. You know, this is typical for German media. They don't even, there's no even idea, there's even Fox News or even a different point of view. You get a complete CNN point of view about America in German speaking media. It's weird, you know, and they copied all the stories about how George Floyd was a poor black saint who got killed for no reason at all. And this is something that was shocking for me, and because I realized how little power rationality has. I should have before. I mean, it's not the first time I had this. During the refugee crisis, I had very similar a crisis, you know, to realize, are people insane? What's happening? It was insane, you know?
Yeah,
like in
yeah.
Camp of Saints, it's also about mass hysteria, a book,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah, I think the migrant crisis now is, like, that's 2015, 5 years yeah. before COVID. And I think, again, it's an interesting foreshadowing of it. It's like almost like a rehearsal where the global the NGOs and the global organizations all converge to make some artificially make something happen that shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I mean, and the Floyd story was also based on complete lie. And you remember this strange thing that all the big corporations chimed in, you know, on Twitter and on Facebook, all had the Black Lives Matter logo, all of them. And now they're doing the same with the vaccinations. You know, all the big corporations are you know, putting out propaganda for vaccines, and then they do it for rainbow flags, whatever is on the agenda at the moment. You know, it's always the same kind of people and the same kind of business corporations and all that. So you see this corporate power and the way it pushes the agenda, and the agenda in every time is based on lies. You know, the Floyd thing was based on lies. Corona is based on lies. The LGBT thing is also based on lots of lies.
The white privilege stuff with the
white privilege stuff,
statues getting taken down. You know,
completely. Yeah. Also. You know, the Trump stories. You know, like the Capitol insurrection, which was not an insurrection. The vote. So we saw this power of lies, enormous power of lies. And in the year 2020, we had it all concentrated. We had the stolen election, we had the Floyd thing, we had Corona, and this was overwhelming for me. You know, it was really for me also to let some delusions go. I realized this is so powerful. You know, rationality is like throwing a pebble against Niagara Falls. You know, and I really had to deal with it in a hard way. It was hard for me to deal with it.
It was,
still is today, you know, is today. But I'm a bit hard boiled now more, you know. Yeah.
So am I. I mean, I had a tough time about a couple of weeks ago where I was thinking, you know, what we're up against here is just fucking massive. And, you know, it was a moment, it was like a few hours, a few hours of feeling just shit. But it's not, as I say, I feel like, I definitely got into shape just in time for this. It's weird how that happens.
I mean, the thing is, I tell you this thing, why I don't know for other people, but why this COVID thing, wouldn't say I'm obsessed with it, you know, but on a professional level, I have to deal with it a lot. But what is fascinating to me is to see, to analyze a thing and see through the lie and then find the arguments against is the only thing I can do. You know, I know I cannot move very much. I can convince maybe a few people, or I can reassure maybe a few people, or reassure myself, you know. But I think the truth is an enormously important thing, and I'm passionate for the truth. And I'm not saying that I always am able to see the truth, because my mind is also certainly full of delusions, and I have to be aware of this. But, you know, on the other side, we have people never in their life a thought crosses their mind that they might be delusional. They think they're completely right, you know, maybe deep down.
Yeah, I saw a quote the other day, something like a philosopher is, or an intellectual is a mind that watches itself, which I thought was really interesting. Mm-hmm. It's the act of being an intellectual and trying to come to terms with the world relies on being very aware of your own frailties, your own delusions, biases, and whatever. I thought that was a good definition. But anyway, we really should wrap this up, because I've got American, the next person.
Right. okay.
And we need to do the questions as well, so that'll be like 10 minutes.
Okay,
let's do that. I mean, I could talk to you for hours, as you know, but there is a schedule. Well, there was at the start of the night. Okay, someone says, Sordello says, this is my fourth millennial, best one yet, and makes a very generous donation. Thank you very much indeed. I agree, actually. I think this is the best millennial so far. I think I'm really feeling quite good about it. But, you know, we're still less than halfway through, so there might be, who knows how badly it could go in the second half. But yeah, I'm feeling good about it. And thank you. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Angerad Celtic says, I've been super broke this past year with lockdown fallout, but I had to send something to make some donation to the smartest, handsomest men on the internet. Love, Angerad. So thank you very much for that.
Is this a girl?
It is, yes. Yes. Mm. But I think she means both of us. She's complimenting you.
It's you.
No, it's you as well.
You're the star. You're the star here.
No. She said men, plural. So she's obviously including you in the compliment. Oh. So thank you very much, Angerad. Okay, now then. Okay. I've seen weekly protests, but nothing changes. Do protests need to get more wild to have an effect? Obviously, we'd have to be very... let's not go into that. For obvious reasons, that's not the kind of thing that we can talk about. I don't think it's true either.
I don't know what wild means here, but, you know.
I think it would just be used against us. I think it would just be used to demonize us. We'd be giving... Of course. That our side would be giving the authorities the evidence that they need.
They are salivating for it, you know. They can't wait for something to happen.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. JQ says, here's $5 for the vape fund. Thank you very much. I actually realized that the component I lost on the floor, there was another one of them right on the shelf next to me all along. So anyway, thank you. Thank you, Armchair Limerick Nationalist. That makes a donation. Thank you very much. I've recounted Lichtmessy's story, another one of these fucking idiots wearing a mask story from last year to various friends, complete with the Austrian accent. That was a golden moment, and I can relate to it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Dave Dogg says, I've just jumped in. What is happening in Austria with the vaccine is terrifying. Yeah, it is. And that will develop throughout next year. The mandate, the fining people, the imprisoning people. Who knows what's going to happen there? As Lichtmess said earlier, I doubt that they can implement it. I think it's a confidence trick. Grunge Muffin says, I love these chats between MW and Lichtmess. Well, thank you very much. And Vingle says, please remember the super chats. I think I've done that. And yep, I think that's them all, actually. So, yeah, there we go. Well, that's that then.
I see we're almost 3 hours by now.
Yeah, 2.5 hours.
It passed quickly. All right. So, yeah. So we wrap it up now.
Yeah, I'm glad that my internet didn't cut out at any time. So
no, mine neither. Mine neither. It was all working.
Okay. All right.
Next
well,
time, I mean, yeah.
It's always fun.
Next time we talk, here's the thing that I could not pack into our conversation. I wanted to tell you about my latest obsession. I got into the Shakespeare authorship question about the Oxfordian theory, and now I'm a staunch, passionate Oxfordian, and it's so exciting, but it has also so many implications about history and about delusions. Also, I should go into this in another talk with you. I'm just annoying my friends by talking about Shakespeare and the Earl of Oxford all the time right now, and I needed to have a break from this COVID shit. You know, I needed to read something exciting to clear my mind and to get involved in it, so I think of something else. So I settled for the Oxford theory question. It's great. It's fascinating. So
all right.
Just mentioning it.
We can talk about that another time. Yeah. But all right, this has been great. I always look forward to this stream each year. So thank you for appearing. And all right.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas, and see you again next year, and hopefully next year we talk about something else. Let's not give up hope. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Martin Lichtmes. I'll be back very soon with American Krogan. We're behind schedule this evening. Sorry about that, but I'll be back as soon as possible. All right. Bye-bye for now.
Millennial Woes has created many things, and this is your chance to own one of them. A unique piece of work handcrafted by the Vile Vlogger to commemorate Millennial 2021. 100 hours of highly skilled labor went into producing this animated vector graphic, which can be magnified to any size. In the iconic Millennial Woes font, it glistens and responds to your touch. And at the center of it all, a figure representative of 2021, the White Stag, symbolizing endurance, discovery, and rejuvenation. This one-of-a-kind creation is up for sale as an NFT. Follow the link below, and it can be yours forever. This is your only chance.